Before we begin, let us take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Sublime One, the Supreme Buddha, by chanting the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. The other day, I was fortunate to be able to go to a prestigious school in Sri Lanka. And no, it's not our Noble International School. It's a different one. But I remember I was walking past one of their boards. And on the top of their boards, they had a quote. And this is the quote that I've heard the quote before, but in that moment, that quote meant so much than I had understood previously. And that quote is, if I remember correctly, man was made from dust. And thou shall return to dust. So it was a quote from the Bible. And it's very interesting. I thought it was very interesting. Because different people believe in different things. And we always think that, okay, everyone believes in different things and that's okay because, you know, everyone's unique. However, if you look at all of these, every single one is connected in some sort of way. Or maybe it's just us who's making the connection, but it seems connected in some sort of way. So this is talking about the start of the world. Now, the start of the world is controversial because you have the debates between religion and science. However, something that we seem to all agree on is man came from dust. So in the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the Quran, in the Torah, as well, they talk about how man came from dust. But let's not forget, even in the science theory, the Big Bang Theory, scientists believe we all come from cosmic dust. So we somehow all say that man or the world came from dust. And I thought this was very interesting, because it really describes a nature that, you know, we as practitioners of the Buddhist philosophy can really understand. Now, there's many reasons why it's very interesting. Number one is dust. What is the value of dust? Can we give dust value? So if I had a heap of dust here, what value can you give dust? And then how much would you pay for a heap of dust? 100, 200, 50, 10. What is the value of dust? It's pretty much worthless. So what you can really interpret from this quote is that, you know, man was created from dust. From something that is almost worth nothing. As in, we don't intentionally create dust. Dust is a byproduct of living, right? So if you were to go into any room in any house, you can always find a speck of dust. Because that's not something that we do to create. I don't know. I don't think anyone comes and thinks, okay, I want to create dust. It's more that, oh, I found dust. Dust, not good. Let me clean this off. I mean, dust, we have given dust such a value that we feel that, you know, dust has to be removed from places. That's why, you know, we spend so much time dusting areas, cleaning surfaces, to make sure that there is no dust. So the value of dust for us is zero. Now, see, this is something that is really interesting. The more you think about this, the more interesting it becomes. I wonder, have you ever played with clay before? I think growing up, I played with something called Play-Doh more than clay, which is basically moldable clay that is not very sticky, but you can mold it, break it, and then remold it into whatever you wanted. Now, if I got some clay and I was to make anything, say, for example, using this clay, I make a house. Can that house be made of anything but the clay that I used? Can that house be made of anything but the clay I used? No, I've just used clay. So can that house have any more value than the clay it had before? So I have a block of clay. I mold it with my amazing skills and I make a house. The house is made from what? Clay. So if the clay was, say, 100 rupees, right, or $5, how much should the house be worth? Now you can say, well, technically labor cost will make it a bit, increase it a bit more, but material-wise, how much more will this cost? No, it'll be exactly the same. If it's $5 here, it's $5 there. Okay, I make a house. Then I take some more clay, and I get some more clay, and I give it to a child, and the child just squishes it all together and makes a ball. Which one is more valuable, the house or the ball? They're both made from what? Clay. So if the clay was $5, whether it's a house or whether it's a squished piece of clay, they're both worth what? $5. Or 100 rupees. Or £3. However, whatever value you want to give it to. It will only be that. Okay, I'm going to use this clay, and I'm going to mold and then polish, right? And make it smooth and make it look like a diamond. Will me smoothening it, right? Or will me making it into a diamond make it any more valuable than $5 clay? Again, minus the labor cost, right? Labor cost we put to zero, right? For now, for material worth. So we're just talking about material here. I mold it into a gem. I mold it into a diamond. Is it worth more now? But it's a gem. It's the shape of a gem. It's a shape of a sapphire. It's a shape of a diamond. But is it worth any more than this ball of clay? Is it worth any more than this house of clay? Which one's more valuable? Clay-wise? None. They are all exactly the same. Now here's the thing. If we are all made from dust, whether it's dust of the world or whether it's cosmic dust, however you want to put it. Which human is more valuable? Which human is more valuable? I must be more valuable than this person. Right? I have to be more valuable. But if I'm made from the same dust that he or she is made from, that they are made from, then can I be more valuable than them? Again, the clay. If the diamond is not as is, if the diamond is the same value as the house, if that's the same value as this child who's just bunched all together, then how can one person be more valuable than another? Because remember, thou shalt return to what? Dust. No matter how great we think we are, no matter how rich or how powerful we think we are, thou shalt return to dust. So, it's like this, right? It's almost like this, right? It's almost this. We have zero. And then we keep adding, right? We add, big numbers, right? Like hundreds, thousands, millions of numbers. And then at the end, you just remove all that. So for example, it's almost like saying, I'm going to add 100,000. But then, at the end, I'm going to remove 100,000. Net change? What is the net change? The overall change? Zero. Start by dust, end with dust. So does this bit matter? Does this bit give this number value? Does this bit give... Okay. Let's take it. We're going to add another 3 zeros. We're talking about... No. We're talking about, that's how much? 1 billion. 1 billion. Right, we added 1 billion. And then subtract 1 billion. Net what? Net change? Zero. So no matter how big this number is, or how small this number is, overall value is? So if we start with dust, and we end, we shall return to dust. So who is more valuable? Who is more valuable? Okay, in this world, so currently the richest man alive, Elon Musk, should be the most valuable person alive. Should be the most valuable person alive. Because he's got, I don't know how much he's worth, but billions, maybe even trillions of stuff. But thou shalt return to dust. There is someone who is homeless, who has nothing to their name. Just ten rupees to their name. Plus 10, minus 10, zero. So who's more valuable? That homeless person on the street or the richest person in life? Who's more valuable? In the eyes of the world, who's more valuable? In the eyes of society, it says something different. Society says, oh, if you're rich, you're valuable. If you're smart, you're valuable. If you are, if you are doing something with your life, you're valuable. But if you're homeless, you're not. But in the eyes of the world, in the eyes beyond society, who is more valuable? Who is more valuable? person A or person B or person C or person X, Y, Z? Who's more valuable? See, this is when you realize if everyone starts and ends the same way, if everyone starts and ends the same way, then why do I feel better than someone else? Why do I feel, you know, superior to someone else? Why do I feel inferior to someone else when everyone is the same? So, again, the more you think about it, I think this quote, I remember just thinking, we were passing by and I read it. And I think the entire journey back to the monastery, I was just thinking about this quote. Because the more you think about it, the more profound this quote actually is. The more profound this quote actually is. Can I have one of our Anagarika Mahatyas do a favor for me? Can you bring some sand onto this plate? Please. Any sort of sand will do. Just some sort of sand. Thank you. So the more you think about it, the more profound you actually can go through. The more you realize, you know, what am I doing? Because if net change is always zero, if net change is always zero, why am I always trying to become better than someone else? Because this is something that you know, we call it ego, we call it pride, something that's drilled inside, deep inside each and every one of our minds, this feeling of, you know, I have to be better than someone else. I have to be greater than someone else. This has been drilled inside of our heads for, you know, almost eternity. For as long as we had a mind that feels self, ego plays the biggest role. However, when you look at this, how can ego play a role? The value of dust? Value of dust? Okay, fine, okay. Let's take a more scientific approach, right? We all, according to the Big Bang Theory, we all come, like, you know, it exploded, dust, not dust everywhere, particles and atoms and whatnot everywhere, and then somehow they all got together, and you're made from hydrogen. Value of hydrogen. What is the value of hydrogen? Again, it's an atom. Atoms don't have, it doesn't have intrinsic value. It's just there. I mean, you can give it value and say, you know what, actually dust costs more than nothing. So we can give it a value of, you know, 1 cent or half a cent. But that's a value that we give it. Does that dust know it's worth half a cent? I don't think you can get half cents anymore. But it's, you know, you start off with zero. And even in science, right, as you pass away and, you know, eventually the world will end and, you know, again, this world will turn back into its parts. So again, you end at zero. Now, this can seem to be a very, you know, a very pessimistic way of thinking. Oh, you know, I start at zero, end at zero. So what is the point of this? What is the point of doing anything here? You know, I'm gonna spend the rest of my life doing nothing. Well, actually, although there is no point of this, there is something that we have to realize. Because if we start with dust and end with dust, What we don't realize is this happens again. This happens again. Again, dust will form so-called you. And then again, take you back down. Again, it'll form so-called you. And then again, you go back to dust. So there's a cycle at play here. A cycle that we have to, first of all, realize. And next, eradicate. So first of all, we have to realize, and then we have to eradicate. But you see, let's take another example. So this is for you to rethink about, you know. Again, this is not to push you down and say, you know, you're not worth anything. No, you are worth. But what we are trying to do here is to understand, you know, why do I feel ego? Why do I feel pride? Because, you know, ego and pride are the two greatest poisons. So in our philosophy, we talk about three poisons. Greed, or desire, aversion, delusion. Right? These are the three poisons that we normally talk about. However, greed, so in Pali we call it raga, desha, moha. However, if you were to expand this, this is raga, moha. This is desha, moha. This is moha, moha. Because ego and pride are what continues to affect us. Thank you very much. Perfect. So unfortunately, I cannot collect dust, right? Because dust cannot be it's very hard to collect dust. So the next best thing from dust, something that looks like dust but isn't dust, is sand. So I have a plate of sand here, right? I wonder, can you see? You can see sand? If I made this heap a bit larger, would you be able to see? Yeah, probably. So, we have sand here, right? I think the way, more when you think of it very physically, it's very humbling. When you think of it physically, because, you know, we can talk about, you know, dust and whatnot, but when you see it physically, it really humbles you. Because if I said, you came from this, no, that can't be. And I will turn into this. This? Again, it's very humbling when you actually see it in real life. So, unfortunately, this is sand, right? But I wish I had dust, but, you know, we can't go around collecting dust. It would take a lot of time to get this much. But, see, even when it says, you know, you are created from dust, right? Again, well, no matter what religion, no matter what school of thought you have, whether you're scientific, whether you're religious, no matter what religion, we, in every sense, everyone believes that we weren't here from the start of time, right? That's something that we all believe, that, you know, somehow this had to be made. Something had to be made. So there was a point of time where you weren't there, right? So that's something that all humans will believe, no matter whether you think of previous lives, whether you don't think of reincarnation, no matter what religion, no matter what school of thought, every school of thought believes that, no, there has to be a moment where I was not there. I had to be created. Right? So for now we're taking sand, or we're taking dust, but if it's science, you're gonna take this to be hydrogen for you, right? Or take this to be a cosmic radiation if you wanted to. Same thing. So you came from dust. You came from dust. Right? if I was to halve this, which is going to be very difficult, right? Now I have two heaps of sand. Okay, this is going to be very difficult. Didn't think this through. We have two heaps of sand. Can you see two heaps? This is working very well. We have two heaps of sand. Which heap is more valuable than the other heap? No, because if I was to just shake this like this, those two heaps become one. So which heap is more valuable than the other? However, don't you feel that, you know, you are special? Now again, this is not saying that you aren't special. But this is saying that, you know, you feeling that you are special has a flaw in it. It is flawed, because if you are special, that means you had to be made from something that's special. That, you know, there was a special carbon that your parents used to make you. Or there's a special, you know, apart from the, you know, the elements of the periodic table, you know, they made a specific element to create you. If that is so, then you could say there's something special about you. But if not, what part of your body is special? What part of you is special? If you came from dust, if your child came from dust, if, you know, the president of any country came from dust, which person is more valuable in the eyes of the world? In the eyes of the world, in the eyes of society, it's different. Because society is the construct of what we think. But in the eyes of the world, dust. Whether you are the richest man or woman alive, or whether you are, you know, whether you are smarter than Isaac Newton or Stephen Hawking or these amazing scientific minds, whether you have hundreds of patents to your name, it doesn't matter. Because in the end, you start with dust and you end we're talking about, you know, the three poisons, raga, dvesha, moha, or greed, or desire, aversion, and delusion. These are all rooted in what? In ego. Now, here's something that I really want you to really think about. And that is, does this sand feel special? Right, should we ask the sand? Right, we'll ask sand. Sand, do you feel special? What do you think the sand will say? If the sand could talk, of course. What would the sand say? Oh yes, I'm very special because I'm on a plate. Right, whereas every other piece of sand is either in a building or on the floor or somewhere else. But I'm very special, I'm on a plate. Will the sand say that? Does the sand, no matter where you put the sand, so I don't know, we melt the sand and we make, oh perfect. We make glass. Does the sand feel more special than the glass? Does sand feel more special than glass? Or does glass feel more special than sand? Knowing that this was made from this. But you know, can you see the beauty of this glass? You know, it's see-through, right? It's smooth. You know, sand isn't see-through. It's very rough. But which one is more valuable? Again, we're not taking into account here labor cost or the cost of I don't know, heat, electricity, none of that. But just the material cost. Because everything else is the same, and I'll explain that in a bit. But does the sand feel more significant, or does the glass feel more special than the sand? No, it will just feel, okay, I'm just, you know, part of this. So there should be a question in our minds. Then if sand doesn't feel special, if that glass that's made from sand doesn't feel special, why do I feel special? Why do I feel to be, you know, different from sand? More valuable than sand? Because, you know, looking at this, now I said this, this is you. This was you back in time. You know, we find it very hard to accept that. You know, no, I wasn't sand. I was not sand. I can't be sand. I have to be something that's not so, you know, probably my sand, right, that made me, probably was the same sand that made I'm just thinking of someone famous, the Queen Elizabeth, right? Same sand. I come from royal sand, or something. We want to feel that no, even though it's sand, that there's something special about the sand that made us. Because we're always looking for something that makes us, you know, a bit more different. See, this is why, you know, that's why they say, you know, that's why they say that God loves everyone equally. Because how can he not? If we all come from sand, and if we are all made from the same thing, how can, if he be the creator, love his creations differently, knowing they all come from the same thing? Or, you know, if you think about this, why, no. If you really understand this, that, you know, we all come from the same, you know, same pot of soup, how can you find one person more special than the other? But you can say, okay, well, you know, this is just sand, right? You know, a human being is more than just sand. You know, we can do things. We can move. We can speak. We can walk. We can breathe. But what is that? We have matter, and then we have energy. You know, learning energy in school, right? We learn about, you know, kinetic energy, gravitational potential energy, elastic energy, nuclear energy, and all of these energies. But when you really look at energy itself, when you really look at energy, it's not that we have different types of energy. More that energy is stored and released in different ways. So the lights are working. Thanks to what? The lights are working thanks to what? Thanks to what? Come on, what are we thankful? We're grateful for lights because they have... See, you can't say electric energy. You can't say that. Because just because we have electric energy, do we have light? No, we have electric energy, which somehow, it, you know, is used to make chemical energy. Right, to make a change in the chemical energy, which is able to create differences in their whatever, right? Let's not get too detailed. But which you can create, what? Light energy? Is that how it works? Or is it that energy is changing into, or energy is being released in different forms? So it's released as electric energy. And then it's released as some sort of chemical energy, then released as light energy. So if we're thankful for the light, we're not just thankful for just electric energy, but we're thankful for every single part of that. We can't be thankful for just one part. Oh, just because we have electricity, I'm happy. I mean, what purpose is just electricity? It's like, you have a battery, but you don't have a circuit. What is the purpose? I give you the most, one of the most powerful batteries in the world, but you have nothing to plug it to. What value does that have? What value does that battery have? Oh, it's like this, right? You have a can, those cans that are sealed, but you don't have a can opener. What is the purpose of the can? But it's a true fact. Cans were created before there was can openers. So there was, I think, almost 50, almost 100 years time where they had cans, they knew how to seal cans, but they didn't know how to open it. So they had to use knives and spoons and whatnot to try opening these cans. So what is the purpose of a can without its opener? What's the purpose of a battery without its circuit? What's the point of light without electricity? So which one is more valuable than the other? You can't say. So which one's more valuable, electrical energy or light energy? Or chemical energy? Or gravitational potential energy? Which one's more valuable? This is just energy in different forms. So this is matter. And then we have another plate. Here we go. With energy. This is what you are. Matter and energy. Matter and energy. This is who you are. This is who I am. This is who everyone is. But again, why do one person feel more special than the other? Why do you feel superior? Why do you feel inferior? Why do you feel to be, Because that's something that we always look for, this feeling of feeling either superior or inferior. Think about this, right? Why do we not like when people show our mistakes? When someone, say, for example, you say, a significant other or a friend or family, they when they point out, or not even them, anyone, whether it's a boss or a friend or a random stranger on the street, when they point out your mistake, why do we, they're doing you a good thing, right? They're helping you improve. But why do we feel hurt? Why do we feel hurt? Because it's hitting some, it's hurting something. What's it hurting? Which one? The sand or the energy? Which one is it hurting? Is it hurting energy? It's hurting something that's not sand, that's not energy. So when someone shows you a mistake, it's hurting sand, not even it's not hurting sand and not hurting energy. What is it hurting light energy or chemical energy? Which energy is it hurting? Or is it hurting this grain of sand or this grain of sand? Which grain of sand is it hurting? It's not hurting this or that. It's hurting what? Ego. It's hurting ego. Because the moment someone tells you a mistake, shows you that you're imperfect, right? Because you're the perfect one, of course, right? You make no mistakes. Once someone shows you a mistake, we feel someone's attacked my ego. Protect ego at all cost, right? Oh, I made that mistake because of this reason, that reason, this reason. Right? How can you tell me what to do when you make the same mistake? Or however you deal with this. So you are hurt, your ego is hurt, right? Or, you're surrounded by, or simply, let's say a group of people, right, are having a conversation.
and you're not involved. Right?
A group of your friends are having a conversation and you're not involved. Or, you know, something that I realize that lots of people are really scared of is if all of their friends have a group chat without them. That's an actual, you know, after talking to several people, people actually have a deep fear that all their friends are talking about them in a separate group chat without having them in there, right? Because why? I need to be there. I need to be in that chat. I need to be able to find out what they're talking about, right? You know, see, this is why, you know, gossip. You know, people who gossip are scared of what? People who gossip about other people are scared of what? Will people gossip about me? What are people telling? What are people talking about? But if you're someone who doesn't gossip, if you're someone who just tells people, you know, how if you're someone. See, you know, they say the best person to catch a thief is a thief. The best person to catch a thief is a thief. Because a thief will know exactly which direction that they will take. So, you know, there's a camera there, so I'm going to sneak behind the camera. And, you know, normally, they you know, the other person, the actual thief, will do the same thing. That's why, you know, that's why the services will actually hire thieves, pickpockets, even people who have done counterfeiting and forgery and all this stuff. So, you know, they have their knowledge and they can help the forces. So, to catch a thief, you need a thief. And so, you know, if you're someone who gossips, you are scared of what? If you're someone who has like different identities, meaning in front of one group of people you are all high and mighty, and then when you are home you are you know as quiet as a mouse, or you know when you're with one group of people you're one way, and you're another group of people you're another way, or if you fake a facade in front of another person, you are scared that the other person is doing the same thing to you. That's beside the point. So, ego. So, if other people have a group chat that you're not involved, right, what they're doing to your ego, that's pushing it down. You feel now really inferior. Because why? I am special. I have to be involved. That's why, you know, people like surprises, but they also don't like surprises. They like surprises because they make them feel really happy, but they don't like surprises because you feel that, you know, other people have been planning something without you knowing. You know, they've created code words, they've created different groups and whatnot, so they can plan something without you knowing. So we like surprises, but we also have, you know, we don't like it. Because again, it's to do with the ego. So again, which one is hurt, matter or energy? What is hurt, matter or energy? Which energy, then which matter? Because beyond matter and energy, there is something else. Beyond matter and energy, so we are made from matter and energy. But beyond that, there is something else. Something that isn't matter or isn't energy, which creates this feeling of ego. Now, what is that? What is that? What is there that is not matter, that's not energy, that, you know, according to our theories, has to be there before the start of time. Because you were made from dust, and of course, that's one part, and also made from energy. But if there's something that's more than that, that means it had to be there before the start of time. Before the start of the universe, there had to be something. Could that be? Can there be something before the start of everything? There can't be anything before the start. That there has to be, it has to be something from these two. But yet you feel, you know, there's something that comes before that. And that's the feeling of, you know, me, ego. The feeling of ego. So is ego matter or ego energy? Which one is ego? Does ego come from this or it come from this? Ego doesn't come from either one of them. Ego comes from a view that our mind holds. See, everything is made from sand. Everything is made from sand. Right, in this example, everything's made from sand. In science, everything's made from atoms, or electrons, protons, or however you want to go through. But everything's made, because this is why they use the word dust. And I think I think the one reason why they use the word dust is because dust is the smallest thing that, you know, humans can see with their bare eyes. Right, because we're talking about something that is beyond, like, our scientific discoveries, right? That's why they even use like cosmic dust, because they're trying to talk about something that's incredibly small. They're trying to talk about things that are you know, so small that we can barely see it. Now, so the question is, right? If we have just matter and energy, where does ego come from? Ego comes from this idea that, you know, from this plate of sand, there are special areas. There are separate areas. Things that are you know, that are separate. It has that view. You see, one of the most powerful forces in the world, actually, in the universe. One of the most powerful forces in the universe is what? Is love. No, it's not love. It's the mind. One of the most powerful forces in the universe is the mind. And let me explain this. It's because... The mind is something that is looking. It's something that is looking for some. Is looking for, you know, it has a view inside of it. The mind has a view, which gives it the idea that there is something that is separate, that is special, that has value in this world. So beyond sand, there is something special. Something special. Now, unfortunately, all there is just sand and its, oh, not sand, dust and its counterparts. That's all there is. So the mind really wants to find something that is special, that is unique, that is separate, that is valuable, but it can't find it. So what does the mind do? It makes it feel as though there is something like that. Now, here's when, this is why I say the mind is one of the most powerful things in the universe. When it does that, it's almost like adding water, a drop of water to sand. What happens when you drop, when you add a drop of water to sand? What happens? It takes the sand and clumps it together. It takes the sand and clumps it together. Putting, you know, the sand will be like this. But when the mind uses, you know, this abhisankara, right? It releases an energy which is almost like adding water to the sand, which will clump these two, which will clump these together to be closer to each other. This is why, and again, not to forget, right? Not just we clump it together, but the mind is able to think of ideas and, you know, mold everything into a specific way. Because what we have to remember is the world around us had to be, you know, things had to come together to make this world. So for example, for this plate to be, this saucer to be made, do saucers just fall from the sky? No, that'd be very dangerous, right? Luckily it doesn't. Saucers don't fall from the sky. Instead, what happens is what? A mind, what? What does a mind do? A mind starts to have the need of a saucer. How did the need occur? I don't know. I don't know where sources originated from. I'm guessing from, I don't know, it may be biased, but I think it's from the UK. I don't know, right? Don't quote me on that. But they wanted to find something to put their cups on, let's say. So they had a need. When the mind has a need, it finds a way to fulfill that need. Now, you know from your own lives, whenever your mind wants something, it will find a way to get it. Either it gets it or else it decides it doesn't need it anymore. You know, the sour grape theory. No? Have you not heard of the sour grape theory? You know, when something becomes very unattainable, if you believe that you cannot attain something, you just think that, you know, it's because it's not so good. Or it's because, you know, it's sour. So briefly, the theory is that I think it's a story which people have been talking about since the beginning of time, of a fox trying to get a bunch of grapes. No matter how high the fox jumps, it just misses the grapes. Because why? The fox needs, so the fox will do anything to get it. No matter how high it jumps, no matter what it does, it cannot get it. And so the fox later decides, oh, I didn't get it because the grapes are sour. Not because I couldn't get it, because the grapes are sour. So when the mind wants something, it either tries its very best without a shadow of doubt to get it. That's why, you know with your own lives, whenever you want something, you try your very best to get it. Right? Sometimes using not so good means either. Sometimes, you know, lying, stealing, cheating, or doing whatever you can to get whatever you need. And so when the mind has a need, it finds a way to do it. So a person wanted a way to put their cup onto something, rest their cup somewhere, because the cup has very hot liquid in it. So it looks for a solution and finds, and they create a saucer. A saucer is made from what? dust. So from dust, they create a saucer. And that's why if I was to, you know, drop this, it will turn back into what? Do you want me to prove it? No, of course not. Because once you once this is broken, it turns back into its I won't say its original form, because it's not original. But it will turn back into dust. It will turn back into its dust form. So out of this, it clumps, causes together, and creates. Or, see, it doesn't create either, because if it's created, you cannot destroy. Instead, it just puts all of this together and makes something that looks to be separate. This is why you feel this to be completely separate to this. These two feel very separate, feel to be so unique, because the mind has, number one, has the view, number two, it's this quality that the mind has. Does this dust want to stay in this form? Does this dust want to stay in this form? This is why a very simple change will change it. Because dust is always trying to do what? What's it always trying to do? Disperse. Energy is always trying to do what? Disperse. Disperse back into its most stable form. In science, you call that entropy. Trying to go back into its most stable form. So this plate, right, this saucer, is like this for as long as the causes are there. The moment I change one cause, right? All I'm going to do is just, you know, add some extra force here. What happens to the plate? What happens to the saucer? Energy will disperse. It's trying to come back to its most stable form. That's why, you know, no matter how hard you try, you know, and you're trying to make the largest heap you possibly can, is that stable? Is that stable? No, because all you have to do is, and it's gone. You try again and make the largest heap you possibly can. Again, small change, all of it's gone. Because it's always trying to disperse. This is the quality of everything around us. But our mind, because of its need and necessity, it brings this all together and clumps it together and keeps it together. This is why this is like this for that reason. This was dust. But because of necessity of the mind, out of dust, we again, I don't want to use the word made, because made isn't the correct word here. Because if this was made, that means this cannot go back into dust form. More that it is, it's like the clay. Using the clay, you make a pen. But it's still the clay. Still going to go back to its original form. That's why, you know, man was created by dust. And thou shalt be returned to dust, back into its most stable form. So, again, which one of these two is more valuable here? Pen, you know they have this almost a philosophical argument, right? What's more dangerous? a pen or a sword? What's more dangerous, a pen or a sword? Now, that depends on who you ask. You ask someone who is good with their words, right? If you ask someone who's really good with their words, you know, a pen is very dangerous. But if you have someone who is really good with their actions, a sword is dangerous. But between these two things, in reality, right, stepping out of this subjective sense and looking at both objectively, which one's more dangerous? A sword or a pen? So subjectively, depending on who you are, one of these are more dangerous than the other. But objectively, so removing you from this equation, which one is more valuable? Which one is more dangerous? The pen or the sword? In other words, which speck of dust is more dangerous? This one. It has to be this one. Is it? Now again, this is not saying that, you know, swords are good or pens are good. No, this is saying that both these are equal. Both these are made from the same thing. Okay, which one's more valuable? A pen or a human body? A pen or a human body? You know, human body took so much more sand to make than a pen. Which one? Which one is more special than the other? Who is better? Who is better than the other? Who is greater than the other? What is more valuable than the other? Which one and what has more value? Look around the world. Right? Everything you look at all came from this. See, if someone was to come halfway, right, and then see me picking up this and say, this was what made you, people would be very confused. But you understand, right, that everything around you is this. You know, today, as a gift to each and every one of you, right, we're going to give you a heap of sand, right, you know, a bit of sand to take home, right? You can imagine it to be a diamond, right? That's up to you. You can give it the worth of a diamond, it's up to you. Because whether I gave you an actual diamond or if I gave you a heap of sand, which one is actually more valuable? Again, I'm not talking about subjectively, I'm not talking about society. Because in society, it changes, because in society, we're looking at the world through this view of separate, through this view of fixed, through this view of everything has to have a value. Because we look through that angle, then do we say, okay, you know, this mic has to be more valuable than this pen, you know, this heap of sand is more valuable than, this speck of dust. And now you're giving it value, because you're looking at it through a very subjective lens. Here, the subjective lens is a lens that is tainted, because that is not what is real. That is not what is actually there. Because you're seeing things and you're judging it off of you. But you are also what part of this objective world. Then why are we looking? Why are we judging according to our? Is going through our lens when you are the same as everything else? What makes you greater than another person? What makes you more valuable than someone else? Or is everyone equal? Is everything equal? Man was created from dust and will be sent, return back to dust. Then why do we feel ego? Why do we feel, you know, I am better, I am worse, I am, you know, I am this person, I am that person? This is a doctor. This is a lawyer. Hold up, let me get some more. This is an entrepreneur, right? Don't let's take some more. Okay. This is hold up, let's get a good room. Right. This is an astronaut. Let's put them all together. Which we'll go. Which one is more special? Which one's more special? Which bit? Oh, I'm sorry, they've all come together. I don't know. How do I separate this out? Because you can't. You can't separate it out. But yet you feel this value. You feel this intrinsic value. You know, something that's really interesting is I was talking to someone and they have lost a family heirloom. I was talking to someone and they've lost a family heirloom. I think it was a necklace. I'm not even sure. Right, a necklace that belonged to their great 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 grandparents, right, and they've lost it. And they are, you know, horrified. They don't, you know, they feel that, you know, they don't know what they're gonna do. Does that necklace know it comes from your great 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 grandfather? Does that watch know that it comes from, you know, your great 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 grandmother? Does that watch know that? Okay, because it's so old, is the sand any older than this sand here? Or do we feel it to be old? I think something that I learned, and it's very interesting. You know how some people, they have family recipes? And, you know, that it's passed on through generation to generation. There was a study done to exactly, because it's a good thing, right? You know, one family does their thing differently to another family and whatnot. And they did a research to see where this all came from. You know, some family heirlooms started because a recipe was printed on the back of a product. And then that became their family heirloom. So we used to think that, you know, it's probably that, you know, my great 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 grandmother probably, you know, experimented and found the perfect bean curry, right? You know, but she just took it from the back of a box. But we feel it to be so valuable because it came from the past. And yes, again, because of time, it alters, right? At first, it'll be like a teaspoon of salt, and then, you know, and then within your generation, someone had a lot of blood pressure, and so they had to have less little salt, and therefore the recipe was altered, right? And then someone couldn't handle the spice, and so they had to reduce the spice, or someone couldn't taste the spice, so had to increase spice. And so the recipe alters within time, but yet you feel that, no, this recipe is special. This is a family recipe. Really? Is it? Okay. Family recipe. Family recipe. Now recipe. Which one is more special? Which one's more valuable? You can take anything. Right? Literally.
Literally, you can just take anything and you say, okay, I have a mansion. I have some rags. Which one's more valuable? You see, it seems so strange, isn't it? You can say, okay, there's a mansion in this. Yeah, a 5-story mansion with an indoor swimming pool and a movie room. And then you also have on the side some rags. Some rags that people use to like wipe surfaces. In the objective world, which one's more valuable? Sand is just sand, or dust is just dust. But yet, people don't realize this, and so people fight and argue and live their entire life in search of something of value. You know, people, like young children these days, and not just children, adults themselves, they are always looking to find something that will bring them value to life. Right? Whether it's a really expensive car, whether it's a big house, or whether it's a significant other. Something that will give them a value to their life. So, I'm giving you all an opportunity. You want something valuable? Everyone, you can take a bit of sand as you go home. Take a pinch of sand and as you go home. Right, be my guest. It's gonna be here on the table. Right, if you want something valuable, take some. Because value is something that's in your mind. Nothing actually has it. Value is always subjective. You know, they say, you know, the bigger the diamond, the more that he loves me, right? Where does that come from? The bigger the diamond, the more that she loves me. Where does that come from? Small, nothing, or just like a, I don't know. If you think about it, right? If you think about it, even in a very subjective way, a diamond is how valuable? How valuable is a diamond? I don't know how you measure value in diamonds. Is it carat? No, carats are for gold, right? But is it for diamonds as well? Okay. So I know 24 carats is the best for gold, but for diamonds, does anyone know? What is the purest diamond? Okay, we don't know. But let's say, you know, on one hand you have, you know, the most valuable diamond there is. How much value does that have? Even in a subjective sense, it's very hard to give it value. Because value can always, it has to be compared. It has to be compared. It's always a comparison. For example, right? If I was to say, okay, which one of these is more valuable? Now you can give it value, but if I say, okay, what is this value? Now you have to ask, in what currency, right? In what in which era? For example, if you're in a time of inflammation, right? This will be like very expensive. But if you're in a time where you know, there's so many pens in abundance, then it's not very expensive. So even subjectively, the idea of value is very difficult to put. You're the last human alive. I don't know. There has been an apocalypse, and you're the last human alive. Right? I don't know. You want to build a clay wall, but you have to fill it with something. You see nothing around you but gold. What would you use to make walls? You use the gold, but do you feel that, oh my God, my walls are made of gold? Being the last person alive? No, you say, okay, it's made of gold, but is it gonna insulate me from the heat? Or is it going to keep me warm? Or is it going to keep the heat out? If it's not, I'm going to have to, you know, cover this with more clay. I don't know, with something else. Because now gold doesn't have any value. Now diamonds don't have any value. You know, let's say you want to make some, you know, you want to make a wall made of concrete. You don't have sand. You would actually like somehow find a way to grind diamonds to put it into it. Because what's more valuable now? Diamonds or that concrete wall? What's more valuable, diamonds or water? Subjectively tell me. Which one is more valuable, diamonds or water? Of course it's diamonds, right? Diamonds have to be more valuable. Because they cost, I don't know how much they cost. Thousands and thousands of pounds and dollars and rupees and whatnot. So it has to be diamonds. But if you're thirsty, if you're living in a desert, you're trekking through the Sahara. You know, you find a lamp and then you rub the lamp. A genie comes out and says, "Do you want a diamond or some water?" We'd be like, "Genie, give me diamonds. I'm trekking through the Sahara. I need diamonds." No, you say, "I need the water," because which one's more valuable now? Subjectively, it's the water. Objectively, they're both the same. But according to your need, according to the mind's need, it will change. So again, people work so hard for things they think to be so valuable, but all it is just this. No, I'm going to spend the next 5 years working my very hardest so I can spend another 3 years in paradise. First of all, where is paradise? That's number one question. Who knows? And number two is because they think that is valuable. But that is the same thing here as the same thing here. I mean, your eyes don't see beauty. Your eyes can't see beauty. Your eyes can't see value. You know, you get the chance to climb, Mount Kilimanjaro, and now you're looking through the sunset. Your eyes can't see the sunset. You can only see the what? You know, you trek up the mountain to see the sunset. You climb up and you're staring into the horizon. Your eyes can't see the sunset. It can only see the colors. And your mind creates this idea of, you know, it's an amazing sunset. And now you sit down and you start seeing how valuable this moment is. But your eyes can't see value. Your eyes can't see beauty. But yet people work so hard to look at things that they think to be beautiful. They look at things that they think to be very valuable. You know, that's why, you know, that's why we do window shopping. Window shopping, we've all done window shopping, right? Where you go past windows and you just stare. You're not going to buy anything, right? It's like you're doing nothing but just staring. You know, this would look good in this place in the house. However, you know, I'm short of cash. And also, we don't need it right now or something. We like looking at things that we think to be valuable, but which one is actually more valuable? You know, you see a beautiful chandelier, right? Very expensive. I don't know, say £2,000, 3 lakhs, let's say, or 2 lakhs, right? You know, I'm gonna hang it in my house, and it will look beautiful. Okay, you hang in your house, but number one, it comes from this, and number two, your eyes can't see that. Your eyes can only see the colors. Oh, it's white, and so your eyes are telling you it's white. It's got a bit of white, got a bit of blue, got a bit of, I don't know, red, yellow, green, and whatnot. And your mind puts them together and says, "Wow, it's beautiful." So in the end, you know, we are all searching for something that comes from this. We are all trying very hard, looking for something that comes from this, that's the same value as this. That's the thing. Looking at it very physically is actually very humbling. Understanding that you come from this, it's very humbling. I'm so high and mighty, but I come from that. I'm so high and mighty, but I'm going to end like that. See, ladies and gentlemen, this is when you open your eyes and you look at ego, and you think, ego, why? Like, if you could talk to ego, like, the first question you should ask is, why? Why are you there? Why are you there? I mean, if everything is this and this, right? Matter and energy, why are you there? You are there because of what? Because my mind has an idea that there is value in this world. My mind has the idea that there's something special in this world. My mind has the idea that, you know, there is something separate in this world. But yet, it all comes from this. So you open your eyes to ego. Right? Because this is the one thing that keeps you, this is the one thing that makes you, you know, no, actually, this is one of the main core problems in your life. Ego. This is the one of the main core problems in your life, ego. Because of ego, do we do a lot of other things? That's why. No. See, think about this, right? Why did someone invent social media? Of course, to connect to other people, right? Connect with people around the world, right? Yes, to connect with other people, and also to show other people who I am and look at what I can be. Does that make sense? Do you show other people who I am? Right, you go like, okay, this is who I am. You know, I've been to this beach, had this meal. I don't know. And I think this day and age, people don't realize that they are very, very open to the world. Like, they'll take photos of their meal and say, this is what I'm eating today. Why do people want to know what you're eating today? No one knows. But you know, either you're showing the world of who you are, who ego is. And also you're looking at who I could be. Like, you know, I could be thinner, I could be more beautiful, I could be owning a dog, but I don't have a dog. You know, like, that's why, you know, people have social media is a different topic. It's an absolute different topic. It deserves its own, I think, series if you need, because, you know, it shows you of things that you also like. And that's why, you know, people have things called baby fever. Heard of that? It's horrible. Right? So those of you who may not know, right? I didn't know until I was told about this. But this is when, you know, on social media, they see many posts of young babies, right? Who are doing either very cute or very funny things. And then they have this strong desire, you know, I want a child. Because what you don't do on social media is put this down. When was the last time you saw someone, you know, with a baby crying and trying to put the baby to sleep, and while they've just woken up in the middle of the night? When do they show, you know, changing a baby's and nappies or pampers, and you know, having to endure the stench? They don't show any of that. They show what? Oh, look, the baby's first word, mama. Ah. Oh, look, the baby's first smile. Look at it. It's so cute. Forgetting to that for that to happen there, a lot of pain had to be endured. Again, ego. So social media was made for what? Ego. Now, I'm not saying that, okay, yes, you connect with other people around the world, right? You know, people that you've never met before, da 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 da. But its main focus is what? And as you all will know, right, how social media is affecting younger generations day by day. Right? It's not something that it's like it's everyone knows it. But we can't do anything about it. It's like something that everyone knows, but we all just look at it and we think, oh no. This, you know, it's like this. What can we do? The thing, ego is something is something that creates a lot of pain. Thank you. For even in the simplest ways, you know, going to school. Do you not remember when you got less than a friend of yours? When you got a mark less than one of your best friends, and you felt so low, so bad about yourself. Even though you know you worked very hard, you studied many hours, but you didn't get higher than a friend. I remember very well that there, you know, in schools you have that very smart child, the child who always gets very high. I remember one year in our school, he does an exam, and unfortunately he doesn't get good marks. However, the funny thing is, he thought he did. So he got very high, I think it was like 95 or 6, right? And he's very happy with this, and he goes around saying, oh, what did you get? What did you get? For the reason to increase what? But goes around and finds out that most people actually got higher than him. And that puts this down. And I remember he went through a lot of mental strain after that. Why? Because he has to be someone. He had to be someone. Not remembering that this is who you are, or who you are. Well, technically, this is who you are. And again, this is not to put you down. This is for you to open your eyes and, you know, take a step back from this subjective world and look at things very objectively. To take a step back and to ask yourself these questions: that why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I trying to say something? Because remember, ego is something that's been there through your entire life. From the day you were born with ego. That's why, you know. You may not remember this, but this is why you'll see, you know, some babies, they like being in the hands of their mother and not in the hands of their father. Why? Again, that's a bit of ego there at play. Because they feel safe with their mother and not with their father. Right? Or their mother is the provider. Right? Right? It's giving me the shelter, the needs and everything. Father's not doing any of that. Right. They don't recognize like that, but they do realize what is giving them the most benefit. Again, ego. So we were born in ego. So right now, everything that we do actually will have a small, at least at least a very small strain of ego linked to it. Very small strain. And very like a good example would be, you know, in the monastery, when you're in the Valley Malu, you're meditating. Sometimes you're very tired and you fall asleep. But you know, it feels so bad just to stand up and start walking. Because why? You don't want to tell other people that you fell asleep. You don't want to tell other people that, you know, I'm not meditating. Again, ego's at play no matter where you go. So this is something that you have to be hyper aware about. Hyper aware. Right? Because in almost in every action, ego has some sort of role. Ego has some sort of role. So it's something you have to be very aware about. But again, whenever you do feel ego, pick up from dust and look at dust and say, wow, this is me. I'm very special. And let the dust humble you to realize you are the same as everything around you. That you are a part of this ever-changing but amazing world. You are part of that. You are not anyone who is greater or worse. See, again, or worse. It's because even when you feel really bad and you feel, you know, I've done something terrible, understand that that's also... You know, I said something to someone and it really hurt them. Understand that that's also both these. It was wrong, of course. But it's also a bit of dust and a bit of energy. Also part of this world, part of this universe. Then it was just an accident, actually. And it's okay. Let's change. So no matter what, every single time, take a moment and pick up some dust and remind yourself that, you know, man was created by dust and will return. Right? And thou shalt return to dust. Again, it doesn't matter what religion, because it's the same with, if you think of science, again, you come from cosmic energy and now you're going to go back to the universe's energy. I mean, it doesn't matter what or where or who or what, understand that, you know, you are no different from that sand in your hand. That everyone around you is the same. That's why, if you understand this, no person is more special than the other. You will be able to associate every single person the same way. That's why our teachers can associate anyone, no matter who, no matter what. Love and show kindness to any mind that needs it. Because why? He knows that every single person, every single mind, every single thing is equal. Who is more special than the other? So that's the thing. So that's from the Bible. Right, that's from the Bible. Now, the thing, this is where we can all agree with. We are on a journey to understand the world. But most importantly, we're on a journey to understand ourselves. You know, people, you know, they try to swim in the deepest of oceans, right? To look at. I remember, I think it was a story maybe. But it's a story from, if I remember correctly, a story from Greek mythology maybe, where all the gods came together and they decided that they want to hide a very, very powerful source of energy somewhere. And so they're discussing among themselves. And they're saying, okay, why don't we sink this to the deepest, in the deepest of ocean? And another god says, oh, we can't do that because man will find a way to go to the deepest part. Right? We don't want to make it that easy. Why don't we put it on the highest mountain? We don't want to do that because, you know, man will climb the highest mountain and find it. Why don't we send it to space? Man will one day go into the sky. They didn't say space. They said the sky, because, you know, Greek mythologies, they don't know about space. They put it in the sky. He said, don't worry, man will find a way to go into the sky and find it. We want to make it very difficult. And one of the gods, I think it was probably the god of wisdom, Athena. She says, why not hide it in the people themselves? Therefore, they can't find it. And they all agreed. See, some people will try to look for the deepest cracks in the world, right? Go through caves, go through everything, looking for something. Some people will look at the stars and travel the skies, travel the galaxies, looking for something. But we aren't looking at the skies or in the waters. We're trying to understand what? Ourselves. Understand who we truly are. Understand the world around us. Because we are our world. By understanding ourselves, we can understand the world around us. We don't look to the stars or look, you know, in the oceans, wishing to go deep and explore all that. We want to explore who we truly are. And like this God said, it's the hardest, because we never question ourselves, because I am perfect. I don't have a flaw. I know. I make the best decisions. So why should I question myself? See, we are looking to understand ourselves. We are looking to understand the nature around us. Because by understanding ourselves and the nature, we've understood what we need. And then this is no longer. So, take all what you learned, right? The one thing I do know is, you'll never look at sand the same way you did, ever again, right? Sand for you is now special, no. but now, whenever you look at sand, hopefully the what you've learned today will come back to you. Again, I didn't trust me when I say this, I didn't decide to take sand, it's just something that I thought, you know, dust, sand, similar enough. But it's a very good thing I did, because again, like I said, it's very humbling to see it in person. I could have done all that without showing you the dust, but seeing the dust itself is very humbling. So I do really wish that you think about these things, right, throughout this week, throughout the next couple of weeks, to actually think about who or how valuable then you really are. Because this sense of value, or the understanding that there is no intrinsic value, that is asar, anatta. Anatta being one way, or one truth of the universe. So practice that. The more you practice, the more you open your eyes. That's the thing. Never take what happens in your life for granted. If you go past something and you see it, look at it and think about it. Trust me, there's always something that's very, very, very useful for you. So I went past a quote, read the quote, and that was it. For my rest of the journey back to the monastery, that was running through my head. Right? Because everything happens. Your environment will give rise to your thoughts. Thanks to your merits, you have environments. Just let your mind start thinking. All right. Do we have any messages today? We have discussions at what time? 12:30? 12:30. We have discussions at 12:30 in the ETU. In the ETU. What else? That's probably it, yes. So be my guest, right? The sand is all yours. I don't want the sand. You can take some sand, right? And pretend it's a diamond or whatnot. It's all yours. Okay. So let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pith, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down through the generation of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's all take one transfer merits that we've acquired to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief principal chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to benefit to all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's all take one transfer merits to Guru Sannanse, as well as other monks resident at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas, Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by translating the sermon, sharing them with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May by the power of merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take one chance for merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who contributed to the construction of the monastery, those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, as well as those who pass on the know-how, extend their well wishes. May the power of these merits, may they abstain from non-meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble fourth path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. The sorting one chance of merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have been friends and family, to all those who have helped to support us, assist us in any way, shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as humans, gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambhava Sasana. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities who keep our watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been friends and family to us in this even long journey in Sansara. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost life in the war be the friend of foe, rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in the calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, and pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this even long journey in Sansara. May by the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plain, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from non-meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we've been witness to the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arithanvansis, Arathmihinvansis, in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arithanvansi or Arathmihinvansi in this very land, in the very life, in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Chupa Chen be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnin mhidetnva Dvesha ginnin
tetva moha ginnenmidetva nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetva raga ghini niveva dvesha ghini niveva moha ghini niveva nivan sapa labeva nivan sapa labeva nivan sapa labeva tunwange susiyananta mahaguna belin siyaloka sisatthiyoma nibbana pramasakin subadaratta sadu sadu sadu.